Welcome to Decoding Careers, a podcast to help software engineers transition into a leadership role.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to Decoding Careers. I think this is now the fifth episode that we've had on the show. As you're aware, I'm Sam Yates, your host and the software engineering recruiter. Now, we all know why we're here today. Obviously, you've been listening to the episodes previously. There's quite a few challenges in the industry with especially senior engineers trying to transition into a leadership role. So my purpose of this show, as you're already aware, is to bring on some of the best software engineering leaders that I know within my network and also outside of my network to really come in and give the software engineers that are listening a perspective and a true perspective, can I add, of their experiences of being a leader and also the day-to-day that they might see when engineers are looking to make that transition. So today, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce the guest for today's show, Vinny Lawrenson Woods.
Thank you, Sam.
I was going to call you Woodsy. So Vinny is a people first technology leader, specialising in engineering and product delivery in startup and enterprise level organisations. He's scaled and coached large local and globally distributed engineering teams across the UK, USA and Australia. Now, since his move to Sydney in 2013, he's led large engineering teams at Vodafone, Qantas and even Atlassian before moving to Prezi as the VP of product engineering, which now he's leading the global engineering and delivery function at the Australian-born tech unicorn. So Prezi is a global digital gifting platform that creates human connections through remarkable gifting moments, and they offer leading digital gift solutions for consumers, businesses, and 800-plus brand partners across the globe. So really interesting guest on the show, representing, by the sounds of it, a great business. So thrilled to have you on our show, Vinny. Welcome.
Thanks, Sam. No, thanks for the invite. I'm really looking forward to the chat.
Really, really excited about this one. And the way I always like to start the show is talking about the very start of your career. So take us back to when you wrote your first line of code.
Well, this is take me back a while. I guess I was probably around maybe 11 or 12. I wasn't really a gamer, but I kind of got interested in computers. And I can't even recall. I guess it was a gift or something, but I got like a small Spectrum, like ZX81 with 1K of RAM, I remember. And like I said, it was a while ago. So the only chance I had to know about code was through magazines. So I started grabbing magazines, writing out code, learning about it. And I just got quite enthralled in it, you know, kind of. And then I moved on, I got a bigger computer. I started creating my own games and things like that through my teenage years. So I guess, you know, it was very much like, it was just an interest and I kind of fell into that.
Yeah, okay. And what, do you remember what sort of age you were? Was it sort of early stages of school or?
I was probably like maybe 11 or 12 when I started probably hitting the keyboard for the first time, and then that kind of just carried on all the way through my teenage years. I guess at school at the time, they just introduced computing in, as a top like course. Like being in the UK, I'm from Liverpool originally. We have this thing in the UK where you get to your third year in senior school and you would choose your kind of options for the next couple of years, and that would lead to your exams. Because I wasn't in the top level maths, you know, I wasn't the most academic person at that time, I didn't have the option to do computers as a course. So it was all really my own kind of directed learning, if you like.
Yeah, okay, interesting. And maybe share with us the reasons sort of why you got into software engineering. That's by the sounds of it, was it like a passion?
It was a passion, but how I got into it as a career was probably a little bit more not linear, if you like. It was a passion, it was a hobby, and I did it. And I probably just never considered it as a job. for whatever reason. And then what happened was, like I said, I wasn't the most academic person. So I left school at 16. All my mates were starting work and earning money and, you know, going to pub and doing all them sort of things. So I thought, I want a bit of that. So I just left school, got a job in a factory, spent 3 months there, went, this is no, I'm not doing this for the rest of my life. Yes, building self-assembly furniture.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it was not good. It was the best learning experience I had. Was knowing not what I wanted to do. I then went back to like sixth form, and that's when I did an O-level in computers, among other things, was just to kind of that opportunity. And then I actually decided to join a diploma course in computer studies. Again, not the most academic. I didn't actually finish it. But it kind of got me knowing that's kind of what I wanted to do.
Yeah, and that's quite interesting because there's a lot of conversations that are to be had with software engineers and engineering leaders in particular, that there's a lot of engineers that really want to understand if do they need a degree to progress in their software engineering career. Because obviously, as we're aware, there's a lot of engineers out there that are self-taught. But what's your view on, do you think you need to go to university to be an amazing software engineer? What's your stance, sir?
Yeah, I think it's down to the individual. Obviously, I did it, and I know a lot of people who didn't go the university route, but I know a lot of people who did. One thing that university does give you is them computer science fundamentals, which I guess if you're self-taught, it probably is something that comes later, and they can be valuable. But it doesn't necessarily mean you need to do a full degree to understand them. You know, it's something you can learn on the job, and I guess I did. So I think, you know, what I really like about software engineering as an engineering function, it allows for that diversity that you can be academic, you can be less academic. The key qualities are like that kind of problem-solving skills. You know, how you approach things logically. There's a lot of innate skills that can tie into it, where maybe other engineering disciplines, you know, definitely like your civil engineering or your electrical engineering, etc., you know, there's really only one way through. It's usually through that academic place. So software engineering is a little bit different that way. And I don't know why that happened that way. Maybe it's because of demand. Maybe that's because of other things. But I think the industry benefits from people coming from it in different places.
Yeah. Maybe run us back to your first job, paid job in software engineering. How did you get it and what was you doing?
Okay, this is an unusual story. So I'm not sure how much I should share about this. But anyway, I like I said, I was kind of, you know, I tried the academic route. It wasn't for me. So I started skipping college, and I wasn't really enjoying it. I was trying not to cause trouble at home. I was living at home at the time with parents, you know, so they wouldn't be happy if I wasn't going to college. So at least once a week I would leave to go to college, and I'd catch up with a mate and go fishing.
We've all been there.
Yeah. And one particular day, a friend of mine couldn't do it. So I was kind of, oh, I'm stuck. What do I do? So I thought, I'll go to Job Centre. I'll just have a little peruse around. I'll have a look, see what's out there. Because it was coming to the end of the course anyway. There was nothing there around computers, but there was a role there for a payroll clerk. I can't even remember exactly what it was. And I kind of just spoke to the person at the desk, and they set up the interview. And I went to this company in the afternoon, and it was really just to fill time. Had the interview. At the end of the interview, they were going, oh, you know what, we think, you know, it's definitely computers your interest. You know, I can see that. There's a software house downstairs. Let me introduce you. So we walked downstairs, got checked in. We had a little chat. They said, oh, send us your CV. Well, you know, blah, blah, blah. Went home, put my CV together, sent it off. A little while later, got brought in for an interview and got the job. And I was the fourth employee at a new startup, yeah.
Was that in Liverpool, was it?
Yeah, it was outside Skemmersdale. Yeah, so nice. Just on the outskirts, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was
very pretty surreal.
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, best thing that ever happened.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Great company. Spent a lot of time, learnt a lot there.
Moving forward, as I mentioned in the intro, you've worked with some top environments, I think it's fair to say. Mm. Qantas, Atlassian, obviously now at Prezi as well, which we all know are top tech environments. Now, from a supervisor point of view, when you was progressing through your career, how much impact do you feel like your leaders or your supervisors had on your career as you was progressing?
I think a huge amount, actually. The company I was talking about that I joined is called Gould Hall Computer Services, and it was run by four partners. And every one of them, all four, were very different leaders. One was a very kind of workaholic, very strong opinions. One was really laid back. One was really focused on the tech and wasn't really a people person. One was quite a people person. You know, it was like I had four representatives of leaders in one space. And it was really interesting. I think I learned a lot from that, the good and the bad.
Pretty lucky to be in that situation.
Yeah. And they had a huge impact, a huge positive impact on my career. Not only kind of giving me opportunities, but also, you know, kind of their behaviours I could learn from and things like that, which was fantastic.
Out of them four leaders, which one did you gravitate to more?
It was interesting, probably different over different times, but probably the one that probably had the most profound impact on my career was a guy, his name was Roland, and he was pretty laid back, you know, a football player, played semi-professional football, you know, kind of really loved a beer, really cool, calm. We remember having plenty of two or three pint lunches over the time. Really cool guy. And over the time, my career had kind of, I don't know if I accidentally got into leadership, but what happened, because we were a software house, we delivered functions for lots of different businesses, and it could be building a stocks control system or it could be an accounting system. It didn't matter. But one of our customers was what they call a handling house, and they kind of did a whole load of things. They had a customer service department. They had a printing and delivery service. They had a warehouse. So it was like back in the day where you kind of collect tokens off the back of a cereal box and then you send it off and get a gift. They handled all that under the one roof. So we were building a lot of their software. So I ended up working there full time. I went there every day. And over time, I ended up looking after their IT department or their development team. And then what happened was, Roland, who was my boss, he was looking after that space. And then he left to go to another customer and he asked me to basically step into his role and look after the dev team. But the profound thing that happened, and I got into that and I understood it, and I kind of, you know, it was a baptism of fire, if you like. It was a real fast-paced, work hard, play hard place. Quite a lot of politics there, so I kind of learned a lot there. And then what happened, he came back after being away for, you know, whatever, 2 or 3 months, and he walked back into the department. And I was kind of expecting him to kind of get back to where he sat and then I kind of go back to what I was doing. But what he actually turned around to me, he walked into the room, sat down, and he went, "Vinny, what do you want me to do?" So he kind of, you know, just said, "You're the leader here. That's what we said. And I'm going to respect that." I didn't expect it. I was like, "Oh, wow." But that had such a profound impact on me then, because that kind of could be that at that time, bit of self-belief, but also it was respect, and there was a lot of other things in there. And I thought, right, I get this. And, you know, and I think that was probably one of the most profound impacts on me.
Yeah, especially giving you that confidence to direct and lead. You will get leaders that will do that, but you'll get some leaders that maybe won't do that, and they're the leader and it's their way, and this is the way you're going to run with it. Come back to you when it's done. So it's good that you sort of had that experience, because I bet you a lot of people haven't.
No. Look, I've learned as much from bad leaders as well. I worked in the US for a while, and the first boss I had was very command and control. He pulled people from the chair and he would literally strip them down, vote no. He would shout and scream, and it was awful. But you learn from that as well.
Yeah.
Because you kind of go, that's not the way to do it.
So talking about that then, maybe normally we always, on the show, we talk about the positives first, but let's jump into that and take the gloves off. What are the three things that you think make a bad leader? Whoa. Starting with number one being the most sort of detrimental to someone's career?
I think a lack of respect, ultimately. Lack of trust. Because I think with being a leader, you have to trust the people you're working with. And you can't blame the people around you for things that you have control of. So if you're shouting somebody down, you're really shouting yourself down because you've done something to create this situation. So I think lack of respect, lack of trust and lack of accountability.
And what makes a good leader?
Maybe the opposite of them. look, I think patience, because I think, especially if you're transitioning from an engineer to a leadership role, what you'll soon find out is the feedback cycle of what you do is a lot longer. So you write a bit of code, you're getting feedback instantly. Or if you're developing a feature, it could be within hours or weeks or, you know. With leadership, you're making decisions which may not impact for 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 24 months. But you've got to kind of trust that you're happy with them decisions and you've got to let them roll out. You can't rush them because things don't happen overnight, like serious change. So I think accountability is a big key one. You've got to be accountable for the decisions and you've got to own them. You've got to be patient. And I think another key one for me is action. You've got to take action when things are not going the right way. So that might be a toxic environment. That might be, you know, someone behaving badly. That might be someone underperforming. That might be decisions, you know, with your peers or your bosses. You need to act and you have to be seen to be acting because it's important that people understand that what, you know, you're setting a bar and you're saying this is acceptable and this is not acceptable. And you've got to be really clear with that. And I think that distinguishes a good leader against a bad leader. A bad leader will let things go on, move on, let toxicity form, not willing to act, go on the easy route, you know. So it's all of them things.
And why do you think software engineers that are looking to step up into a leadership role, why do you think that they could potentially hold back or not have the confidence to do so? Do you see there being a particular pattern? Is it management skills? Is it lack of leadership? Is it scared of moving away from the tech? What do you see?
Yeah, there's probably lots of different reasons. You know, it's the reason why they want to move into that role. And I think the first thing is a conversation with yourself and to kind of go, is this actually something I want to do? Or is it just because I want to earn money or this is the only way I'm going to get promoted? You've got to think of the drivers for why you want to do that. Because if you're not sure why you want to be a leader or you kind of know you don't want to, but that's the only way that you're going to maybe get more money or then that's probably the first thing. You need to get past you before you kind of go into the next steps. The next steps, I think, are because often you will get promoted or moved in the company that you're in. So all of a sudden your peers become they're reporting into you. So then you're in a position where you need to make decisions that's going to impact others and live with them. And then if you've been friends with people, you know, it makes that whole situation uncomfortable, you know, and that's probably another piece from it. And I guess it's, you know, I've used the word a couple of times, accountability. When you're working within a team, that often that accountability is shared, possibly, you know, there's a wider group. But once you step into that leadership, the people are looking for you and then you've got to make a decision. You've got to live with that decision and you've got to be okay with making that decision. And you've got no one really to actually go, okay, well, it was so-and-so in the team. You know, we made it together. You haven't got that fallback as much, you know. Yeah.
And I think we caught up probably a month ago. I always remember one thing that you said to me was, if you are looking to progress into a leadership role, you shouldn't be knocking on the door saying, I want to be a leader. You should already be leading.
Yeah, look, I think that's from experience. To me, that's rang true pretty much every time. if someone is saying, when I get to this level, I will do these things, or when I get to this level, what do I need to do? You probably already discounted yourself. Because every role, doesn't matter if you're a junior engineer to whatever level, you have the opportunity to actually do more than what you do in your day job. And new leaders are often seen, not kind of created, if you like. So you kind of, and you see the people who are starting to take the lead, regardless of title. And they're the people who are happy to make a decision or to be proactive or to kind of make suggestions, to start taking on that role of, I'm happy to move this conversation forward.
Yeah, okay. Probably going to throw you under the bus here. What are the, not throwing under the bus, but what are the biggest lessons that you've learned as a leader? Like, probably talking of your top two. If you could look back on your career and, you know, you obviously you learn. It's all about making mistakes. That's how you get better. You learn and then you improve. Just to help the software engineers that are listening, what would your answer be to that?
I think the word that keeps coming up is strategy, and I'll just unfold that in a minute. It's really understanding where you're going. You know, you especially as an early leader, you kind of fall in, you're not sure exactly what you're doing, you're trying to find your space. But to actually, to lead is actually to give clarity, to kind of, this is where we're going and this is why we're going. You know, it's back to that, you've got to get over yourself, you've got to understand and you've got to trust yourself. So if one of the big ones is you need a plan, you need to know where you're going, and you, because you can't lead others if you don't know where you're going. Because one of the amazing things about being a leader, you can influence, you can change the environment, you can change the space, you can change how things are done. But you've got to understand what that is and why. I don't think there's any use of going into a role and just slipping into a vacant space and moving the status quo on. You're there to actually improve things. And improving means change happens. And that can be good or bad change, but ultimately you need to change to improve. The bad change you'll learn from, the good change, you know, you get to and over experience, hopefully you make more good choices than bad choices. So I think having that plan, I think, is good. Understand what you, even if you're not sure if that's going to work out, but you're following your gut, you know, try it, play it out. But you're going to take people with you if they know where you're going. So I think that's probably the top one. And I think I've mentioned it before as well, patience. If you're going to influence, you've usually got 200 people you need to talk to. You've got lots of different things you've got to keep. You've got to get your team on board. You've got to get stakeholders on board. You've got to get leaders on board. Change is not going to be quick. But if it's worthwhile change, you've got to be kind of tenacious and keep at it. But you've got to know the plan so you can stick to it. But then you've got to wait for it to play out. And if you panic and go, oh, this is not happening, and you change it, then you just end up in a kind of a mess.
Mm.
You know, so two of them, plan and patience.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Really, really good answers, especially with the strategy piece, planning out and painting a clear picture of where you're heading for your own sort of sanity as well. All right, and what would you do differently? If you had your time again, is there anything that you would do differently? And it's not so much to improve, it's more just as a reflection looking back.
There's probably lots of individual moments. I'm not sure how pivotal they were. Probably early on, I think I was very agreeable. And what I mean about that is you're working with a lot of smart people, and often you're, you know, especially coming from being an engineer to a leader, you're trying to play this place where you're not being the engineer, and you're trying to give the team the ownership. It's your choice. You do it. I'm here and I can say all the right things. I'm going to ask questions. I'm not going to influence. I'm going to prompt you to think of the right things, but ultimately it's going to be your choice what that outcome is. I think an early one I recognized, I was probably letting some stuff I would probably have said no as an engineer go as a leader, because I was probably early into it. I was, you know, you want to be liked and you want to be kind of go like that, and you also, I wanted to give the team, I like the idea of giving the freedom. But I think there's also, there's a point where you actually, you've got to go, step in and go, you know, I want to give you all this, but really, let's look at this. Not to, to stop it, but it's actually, let's point it a different direction, maybe point out maybe some of the flaws, let them find the other answers. But sometimes you need to step in. And probably early on, I was probably maybe, you know, wanted to please a little bit too much and wanted to, so I'd probably let things go. And then in retrospect, I was like, I should have stuck to my, what my gut was telling me, and really kind of got more in that conversation and helped direct it in the right place. But that was me trying to find my feet, and maybe I needed to go through that to understand that. And it, that's the problem when you actually think, would you do things differently? Everything I've done has got me to where I am. You know, even the time I wasn't working in tech added so much to my capabilities in other ways that feeds into what I do now. So it's hard to know, would I be a better or worse leader if things had worked out differently?
Yeah, 100%. No, I agree with that. And finally, what's next? What's the next chapter look like?
It's a really interesting question. And the truthful answer right now is it will always be working with people. People are a passion in terms of growing people and growing teams, however that looks. And that's what gets me up in the morning. You know, you see people get better at what they do. One thing I say, and I'm really open it, I say it in interviews, is I want you to leave Prezi as a better engineer. Because to me is like how we can all kind of grow, how we can all get better. You know, we can't expect everyone to be around forever. So why can't we help each other move along? Because as an engineer grows, Prezi grows, and they move on and they will help the next chapter. And, you know, they'll grow somewhere else and hopefully come back. You know, so I think, as whatever, so for whatever it is with me, it's always going to be around that, with people and people growth and team growth as well, because that's my passion.
Maybe you can go in and do a leadership talk at Liverpool then and try and get the passion back out there.
Oh, low blow, low blow.
No, I mean, look, I think there's been some really good insights. There's a few pressing questions as well. I think you've answered them well. And I think there'll be a lot of engineers that listen to this that will sort of aspire and take bits away to what you said today, and just help them make that transition. Or if it's not to make the transition, maybe they've already made the transition and they just want to know how to become a better leader. But I think, in short, nobody's perfect. I think you've got to try things to make mistakes to then get better. There's no rule book. I think you've got to just throw yourself out there and make it happen and make them mistakes as well.
Absolutely. I think it's key. Yeah.
To be a better leader. But thank you very much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for the invite. No, it's been great. Good to have the chat. I might just add, like I said, I'm on LinkedIn. If anyone wants to, you know, if there are any aspiring leaders, look, I'm more than happy to chat. Like I said, I don't have all the answers, but I've definitely got some experiences, but always happy to chat.
You've been listening to Decoding Careers with Sam Yates. This podcast is proudly brought to you with the support of recruitment agency Discovered People. To find out more, go to discoveredpeople.com.au.